The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
This affects all of us in terms of misinformation. How will this change our lives? And when he says open it up to free speech, does that allow more misinformation on the platform?
This power can be used to tilt elections if someone were to want to use it that way.
There are a lot of people at this company who are afraid of
them. Elon Musk is a danger to Twitter and to freedom of speech.
Definitely not good for the country.
The tech platforms must be held accountable for the harms they cause.
Questions about what will happen to what is perhaps the most influential social media company in the world. At a time when authoritarians, insurrectionists, and rogue petrostates are weaponizing disinformation online in a way they've never done so before.
To me, when the richest guy in the world takes over the most important social media platform, that's just not a winning formula to me.
It's clear he has a very little understanding of the complexities that go into content moderation.
Elon Musk lives in a world in which the only kind of free speech is white men feeling free to say whatever the hell they want.
So there you go, the full media meltdown over Elon Musk completing his purchase of Twitter yesterday, $44 billion, and they don't like it. I love the guy that said that, you know, this power couldn't be used to tilt elections. You don't say. They know all about how it tilts elections when these radical communists are in control. It's pretty amazing to watch. How revealing is it to see them react in this way? You know what kind of power they've had. Just look at the reaction. This is just one social media site. This is just one website, basically. It is powerful. It is influential. There's no doubting that. But they can see that they're losing a little bit, just a little bit of their control. And so they react the way they react. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining our growing audience. You can get to the live audio stream of this show through CRN Digital Talk Radio. That's Channel 3 on that platform. To get to the live video, however, you've got to go to our very own website. That's thetrumpet.com, as you can see there at the bottom of the video. Thetrumpet.com or thetrumpet.com/live, to be precise. That takes you right to the live stream page, and also you can get to the podcasts that are posted after the fact if you prefer to view on demand. So in some cases, these clips that we have here today, I mean, the montage speaks for itself, but look at the complete and total lack of self-awareness on the one hand. And this is from MSNBC, but this is from yesterday. Again, the reaction to Elon Musk buying Twitter, clip one.
You own all of Twitter or Facebook or what have you. You don't have to explain yourself. You don't even have to be transparent. You could secretly ban one party's candidate or all of its candidates, all of its nominees, or you could just secretly turn down the reach of their stuff and turn up the reach of something else, and the rest of us might not even find out about it till after the election.
Wow. You mean you can actually control the flow of information? You can actually ban political candidates? You can actually ban a president? Did you know this? He's completely given the game away. That's exactly what has been happening over the last 5 years. Donald Trump was banned from Twitter before he was even out of office. He was the sitting president of the United States of America. They're losing a bit of control, you see. They know. They know. They're revealing themselves. They know how important it is to control the information. It's like Mika Brzezinski said 5-6 years ago. Right at the early part of Trump's presidency, she was talking about, I forget what the subject was, but she was basically saying, you know, it's our job to control the information. That's right. And when they lose that control, and this just shows how much power, just like my father has written, how much there's a great section, by the way. We got our draft of the, I meant to mention this yesterday, we got our first draft of the new and expanded version of America Under Attack. It's something like 190 pages in rough draft form. There's quite a bit of editing and proofreading and things like that that we'll be going through, some of us, in the next few days. It's something to be thinking about and praying about, even. The cost for the book together with postage, I mean, it's a bigger book, and it's going to be probably the most requested piece of literature that we produce. I think it'll amount to about $2.50 or $3 per book to distribute it freely. All of our literature, we give it away free. No cost, no obligation. I mean, there is a cost. There is a cost, and it's paid for by the many faithful supporters, co-workers, donors, members, scattered over all the earth. It's a little flock, just as Jesus said it would be. But what a faithful group of servants serving God, spreading the truth. This comes from a section about the law-breaking, just the rank law-breaking. It says here, this again is from the rough draft of America Under Attack. It says, the Trump-Russia investigation lasted 3 years and cost $40 million. The radical left did all they could to use this investigation to cripple the Trump presidency. It says, and the entire investigation was based on a filthy, worthless dossier and thus totally fraudulent. Totally fraudulent. It says here, it was an attack. It was all to attack Donald Trump, and perhaps more importantly, to distract from the cover, to distract from and cover up their own criminal treasonous activity. They were trying to destroy Donald Trump and at the same time cover up their rank lawlessness. As it says there in that that booklet. Let me just move ahead. This is from that we've talked a bit in the last couple programs about Piers Morgan's interview with Donald Trump. Listen to this exchange. Basically, Morgan's sitting there going, you know, I used to know you from back at Celebrity Apprentice days. And I mean, you weren't quite as aggressive and confrontational. And people are concerned. They're worried about you coming back. But look, if you come back as president of the United States, will you change? Will you change? Will you be nicer? Will you do away with the mean tweets or whatever it is that they have a problem with? And so many of them are being revealed. The rhinos, Kevin McCarthy, Mitch McConnell. Nobody will stand up to the radical communist left. But listen to Donald Trump here as he says, look, consider what it was I was going up against. Here's the exchange, clip 7.
What message do you have to people who can't think of anything worse than you running again and will be distressed about it? Would you come back with all the experience you've had of being president? Would you come back a different person? Would you do things a bit differently?
So I like this question in a certain way because I came in and I was attacked from day one. Unfairly, Russia, Russia, Russia was a hoax. The impeachment hoax, number one, number two, it was all a big hoax. The Mueller report. And I had to fight back, and I had to fight back strongly. And if I didn't fight back strongly, I wouldn't have survived. And I say it, and I say it loud. I had two jobs to do. Run the country really well, and the second was to survive.
He's right. Name one other president that had to fight to survive, to even survive. He's there saying, if I wouldn't have fought back, they would have destroyed me. They would have destroyed the presidency. It is remarkable when you think of it. And of course, there's a spiritual dimension behind these many prophecies regarding Antiochus and Jeroboam, as we've pointed out so many times before. But still, just looking at the job, the way that he ran the country, and the way that he fought the communist left. It says here in the rough draft version of America Under Attack, they weren't merely trying to wrest control from Mr. Trump. They want to take control of the government forever. They want to take control. They want control of everything. That's what's so revealing about the meltdown over Twitter, over one social media site. They want control. And when they lose it, they slip into a hysterical fit. It says here, they are working hard to smash the last remaining obstacles preventing them from accumulating so much power over the country that no one can do a thing about it. That too is revealing in this transaction. The fact that, I think Tucker Carlson made this point last night. I mean, Elon Musk, he's never been known as a hardline conservative. He just wants to champion free speech. But that we're putting our faith, our trust, those of us in America who want free speech, that we're putting our faith and our trust in an eccentric billionaire? I guess this is where we are. This is all that we have left. It shows just how far we are from our constitutional foundations. How far removed we are from just upholding the law. The law speaks for itself. Musk, in his statement yesterday, he said, "Free speech is the bedrock of a functioning democracy, and Twitter is the digital town square where matters vital to the future of humanity are debated." He said further on, "I also want to make Twitter better than ever by enhancing the product with new features, making the algorithms open source to increase trust, defeating the spam bots, and authenticating all humans." Says Twitter has tremendous potential. "I look forward to working with the company and the community of users to unlock it." And you would think everyone would be celebrating a move such as this. But he's not the prototypical left-wing billionaire. He's not George Soros. He's not Jeff Bezos. And so he's a threat to democracy. And so he's a racist. And so he's this. And so he's that. And on it goes. Listen to Jen Psaki, the White House spokesperson, her reaction to this news yesterday. Clip two.
"What I can tell you as a general matter, no matter who owns or runs Twitter, the president has long been concerned about the power of large social media platforms, the power they have over our everyday lives, has long argued that tech platforms must be held accountable for the harms they cause. He has been a strong supporter of fundamental reforms to achieve that goal."
Ah, yes. I think it's Title 280 or something, the reforms that they want to make. Reforms, by the way, that President Trump wanted to make, but he never could get Congress on board with it. It never could gain traction in Congress. There was too much weakness. Just let big tech do whatever it wants. And, of course, as long as all of the radical communists are in control, like they were with Facebook, like they were with Twitter. Twitter, remember, banned all discussion on Hunter's laptop. And then you've got the MSNBC host coming out and saying, you know, it's so powerful, it could actually tilt the election. Well, that's exactly what they did in 2020. Now, they cheated in 1,000 different ways. It wasn't just the cover-up of Hunter's laptop. That was one of many. They want total control. Like my father says in the booklet, America Under Attack, it says here, remarkably, in that whole time, he's speaking of the Mueller investigation, he says, in that whole time, not one person from the Obama administration ever leaked this truth. There was not one whistleblower. All the whistleblowers, remember, they worked against Donald Trump. He had to fight for his presidency every single day of his administration. So he was running the country on the one hand, like he said to Piers Morgan. And then at the same time, he had to fight for 4 years, 5 years if you count the lead up to it. They were spying on him, his campaign, his presidency. They were going after his administration, General Flynn and others. They were out to destroy Donald Trump. That's the kind of power that these people had. They still have it, a lot of it. and they scream when they lose just a tiny bit of it. They scream. So revealing, isn't it? Of course it is. It says here, even the Republicans went along with it. This farce, the dossier, the Mueller, the 3 years, $40 million. It says perhaps many of them were guilty of corruption themselves. Where have we seen even one serious whistleblower among these pathetic elites or anybody else? Obama has a power that is beyond human understanding. See, before him, they swooned. They swooned. We bring this out in the first version of America Under Attack. The reporters that just kind of laughed it off. Yeah, that's right. I throw Obama some softball questions because, well, he's Obama. He's Obama. And meanwhile, Donald Trump, who did, leaving aside politics, he did a pretty good job, certainly with the economy and some of those things. And then he's got to sit there, and he agrees to do it with Piers Morgan for an hour, for an hour. And then Morgan, he splices together the video to try to make it look like he stormed off the set. But even as it was nothing like what Piers Morgan said it was. But even as it was, he's got to sit there and answer a question of, hey, are you, now people are concerned you might come back to office. Are you going to change? Are you going to change for the better? Are you going to be nicer? Are you going, look, I know you from way back. You aren't always this confrontational. What would have happened? What would have happened if Donald Trump had not confronted this satanic movement to destroy and conquer and to get total control? That's what they want. Says here, the American people are still learning the full extent to which Barack Obama was personally directing this massive treasonous plot against Donald Trump. And the only reason we know as much as we do is because Devin Nunes pressured the FBI into providing congressional committees with 384 pages of text messages between FBI Special Agent Peter Strzok, who was heading up Crossfire Hurricane, and the woman with whom he was committing adultery, Lisa Page, who was working as counsel to the FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe. How does this happen? How did they cover it up? Well, they had a lot of cooperation and support coming from the communist left in the media, coming from big tech, the deep state, all of it. Victor Davis Hanson, he in an interview yesterday, he said that the left and Silicon Valley are terrified. They are absolutely terrified at the thought of Musk buying Twitter because it's going to limit their control over the public discourse. As long as you can ban people, and look, the CEO, the current CEO of Twitter has made no bones about it. Yeah, you know, free speech, forget about that. I mean, like Brian Stelter said in the montage, we've got to be able to moderate the discourse. After all, there's a lot of misinformation that's spread. All that means, misinformation to these deranged lunatics is to disagree with them. And so, as Tucker said last night, now here we are in America, putting faith in this eccentric billionaire that never, as I say, never really was accused of being a conservative, but he's just making one stand. Now, I don't want to make light of his success. He's the world's richest man. There were blue check marks going around last night that, well, can we really put someone without a PhD over Twitter? What are these people thinking? Here he's probably the most successful entrepreneur in modern history. He's a, leave aside his faults, whatever they are, this man is a doer, Elon Musk. He's a worker. He's a producer. And he's risking quite a lot with this venture. But here come the elites, now calling into question his education. His education, of all things. It seems to me they might learn a thing or two if they just maybe studied into his life a little bit. Of course, he's got some bizarre thinking and views and ideas. Everyone in this world does. But why would they just drop into a hysterical fit over one purchase. Listen to Rachel Maddow from her show last night, clip three.
I mentioned the bipartisan infrastructure bill allocated $7.5 billion for EV charging stations for the entire country. Elon Musk is spending nearly six times that amount to buy a website where people can write stuff in 280 characters. Elon Musk buying Twitter says a lot about the priorities of people at the highest levels making decisions that could affect the fate of the planet.
Here again, a total lack of self-awareness. We need to question people, rich people like this, and their power, their influence. Where was this talk about 2 seconds ago when big tech, big media, big government controlled the flow of information, whether it was the dirty dossier, a lie, or the Hunter laptop, real, but they said it was a lie, and on it goes. This is, again, from Rachel Maddow's show last evening, clip four.
But, of course, it also raises a lot of questions about what will happen to what is perhaps the most influential social media company in the world at a time when authoritarians, insurrectionists, and rogue petrostates are weaponizing disinformation online in a way they've never done so before.
Right. And so we need the left-wing communists to control the information to make sure that if it's someone that is spreading something that she doesn't agree with, well, we blot it out. We blot it out. Elon Musk comes along and says, I want to open it up. I want to make sure both sides have a voice. One last clip from her show last night, clip five.
What will it mean for our society and our democracy that one of the biggest social media companies in the world will only be accountable to that one guy and what he considers free speech?
Right. What he considers free speech. If I lose control over what is free speech, then it's dangerous. These people, Trevor Noah, he claims to be a comedian. This is what he said on his show last night, clip six.
Whether you are for Elon Musk or against him, you've got to admit, it is pretty crazy that one man is now in control of all of that. Whether it's a billionaire you like or a billionaire you hate, as a society, I think we should spend more time interrogating how easy it is for billionaires to shape our world in their favor.
Now they're very concerned. As Tucker said, the tyrants are grieving tonight. Yes, they are. They are concerned. They are worried. They're afraid. And as I say, that's with an eccentric billionaire getting into the mix. Nobody really knows what it is he's going to do other than his statement said, I want to make it better. I want to open it up for free speech. Donald Trump, for his part, he announced yesterday that he's not going to rejoin Twitter, even if he's given the opportunity. He's going to stick to his... he's in a difficult position. The Truth Social venture for him hasn't started off. I'm sure it hasn't started the way he was hoping. But, I mean, he's invested in this. This is a competitor, really, for Twitter. It'll be interesting. As I said on yesterday's show, this next week, Twitter opening, and I guess the deal isn't finalized till this summer, but still, there's an immediate change. People like Tucker, they're already getting their Twitter page back on, off the ban. So there's immediate change that's happening this week, and I guess it's finally formalized this summer. But as I was saying yesterday, I mean, when you think about this happening with Twitter, and then this new movie coming out by Dinesh D'Souza, 2000 Mules, that's going to get more publicity. It's certainly going to get more publicity on Twitter, as people can actually look at the footage of these mules that were being paid $10 or $15 per fraudulent ballot. Thousands and thousands and thousands of mail-in ballots, all of this corruption, all of this lawlessness. And, of course, more of it being revealed every day about the Biden crime family, about the lawlessness of Barack Obama and everyone associated with the Obama regime. Listen to this from Fox Business yesterday, clip 8.
President Biden claiming over and over he knew nothing about his son Hunter's business dealings. But new reports from the New York Post show that Hunter's closest business partner made at least 19 visits to the White House and other official locations between 2009 and 2015, including a sit-down meeting with then Vice President Joe Biden in the West Wing.
This is what big media and big tech covered up in 2020. And it actually tilted the election. Remember the survey we referred to a while back where 16% of Biden voters, I think it was, said that they would have, had they known everything about the Hunter laptop, they wouldn't have voted for Biden. So it tilted the election. It actually did. Through it all, for just notice, Jim Jordan pointed this out yesterday. Notice the progression. First, the laptop wasn't real. And if the New York Post or anybody talked about it, banned. Immediately banned. Okay, then it was real, but it was Russian disinformation. So it wasn't actually from Hunter. The emails and things weren't from him or his associates. It was set up. They were all lies that the Russians had put on this laptop. And now you go forward 18 months. Now it is Hunter's laptop, but Joe Biden had nothing to do with it. Joe Biden was not connected to the corruption at all, the pay for play, none of that. And for Biden's part, he's been out there saying consistently, I knew nothing about any of my son's business dealings. And now we know. Thanks to who? A few people that are seeking, the New York Post, for example, who are seeking out the information and trying to make it known because there's so many people covering it up. The president, the CEO of Rosemont Seneca, Biden's company, Hunter Biden's company, visiting the White House when Joe Biden was in there as vice president 19 times and one time a sit down with Joe Biden. It's on record. You would think there'd be alarm bells going off at CNN or MSNBC. Listen to Jim Jordan on Fox News yesterday, clip 9.
First, it was Tony Bobulinski, another business partner who was an eyewitness before the campaign a year and a half ago, who told us that he had met with Joe Biden. So you got one business partner meeting with Joe Biden. You got Joe Biden firing the Ukrainian prosecutor who was beginning to look into Burisma, the company Hunter Biden was on the board for. He was on the board. And now you have Joe Biden 19 times meeting with another business partner. But he said, oh, I had nothing to do with it. We know that wasn't true.
Rank lawlessness. As it says in the new version of America Under Attack, there's a subhead on page 65, 66, rank lawlessness, law-breaking at the highest levels. This is from Kim Strassel speaking about Hillary Clinton, her team, you know, the people responsible for the dirty dossier. It's like Donald Trump said in that interview with Piers. I had to run the country and I had to fight against this demonic attack. I added the word demonic. It says here, this month, Mr. Durham, speaking of the Durham report, asked a federal judge to compel Fusion, the DNC, and the Clinton campaign to hand over documents for the judge to review in chambers. It says the filing says Fusion GPS is sitting on some 1,455 documents covered by his subpoena. The Clinton campaign and DNC are asserting privilege over communications between Fusion and Rodney Jaffe, a tech executive, who the Durham team says used his position to access non-public internet data to produce allegations against Mr. Trump. So they're just trying to get to how this was all set up. It was a hoax from the very beginning. And true to form, you've got Clinton and her people trying to cover up the evidence of the law-breaking. Says here, on what grounds do the parties refuse to produce the documents? It says, in a flurry of filings Tuesday by Fusion GPS, the Clinton campaign, the DNC, Mr. Jaffe, and Perkins Coie, they explain that, contrary to public records, sworn testimony, news articles, books, and findings of federal investigators, Fusion was retained not to do Oppo research, but to support Perkins Coie's legal advice to Democrats, and its documents are therefore covered under attorney-client privilege. Well, we're just trying to help. We can't turn over our documents. It's attorney-client privilege. That's privileged information. You see how it works? There's no whistleblower. On this side, no whistleblowers. Nobody in the Clinton camp, the Biden camp, the Obama camp, nobody coming forward saying, this was a total lie. We made it up. We were trying to destroy Donald Trump. This is what Donald Trump was fighting against for 5 years. To be true, to be sure, he's still fighting. He's still fighting against it. Now, if you come back, will you change, Mr. Trump? Will you be nicer? Because a lot of people don't think you're very nice. Why do they not think they're very nice? Why do they think what they think about Donald Trump? Well, look at the control. Look at the control the communist left has on the flow of information. And if you aren't convinced about how near total that control is, just look at the way they react when they lose one social media site. When Elon Musk, no conservative, but someone coming in as a champion for free speech, says that, hey, I want to buy up Twitter. It's like the public town square, and I want to make sure that everyone has a voice. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to email the show, you can always contact us via email. That's td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. Every particle of human suffering, unhappiness, misery, and death has come solely from the transgression of God's immutable law. Obedience to God's law liberates us from all unhappiness, pain, and suffering. It frees us from captivity, from spiritual slavery. Obeying God's commandments guarantees a life overflowing with joyful abundance. For much more on this subject, request a free copy of The Ten Commandments. When you make your request, don't forget to enroll in the Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course. This 36-lesson course is a distance learning program that will help you to get to know your Bible. Each month, you will receive a lesson that guides you in discovering the answers to life's most important questions, all from your own Bible. Your enrollment has already been paid for. Enroll today. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
On yesterday's show, I mentioned my recent trip to the Portland, Oregon area and just how Satan must have a special glee for seeing that city in the rundown state that it's in today. The spread of homelessness just all over the city. Lawlessness. Who can forget the rioting that just went on for months in Portland just a couple years ago? And when you consider the history of God's work in Portland, in Salem, in Eugene, in Jefferson City, in all those areas that we're aware of, those of us that maybe didn't grow up there, just because of the autobiography of Herbert W. Armstrong. In fact, I actually grew up near there, about 4 hours away, a little town called Pasco, Washington. And I remember even as a teen, as a youth, thinking about just how clean and beautiful Oregon was. You'd cross into Oregon from and Washington was beautiful as well, the Great Northwest. All these mountain ranges. All these waterworks, rivers, lakes, the ocean. And yeah, you cross into Oregon from Washington, and right away you're greeted by a sign that says, don't litter. If you get caught littering, I forget what it was when I was a kid, but it was thousands of dollars, hundreds of dollars, perhaps. We crossed over one bridge this past weekend, and there was a sign that said, if you litter, the fine can be as high as $6,750. $6,000 if you litter. And then you proceed to drive through Portland, and you see all of these homeless camps surrounded by garbage. Garbage everywhere in the city of Portland. What has happened to our cities in the United States of America? Well, you can look at one example and see. You can see what happens when there's just, well, when you've got a radical government presiding over it and offering incentives, basically, to the homeless. Yeah, go ahead. Walk into Walmart, grab a tent. You don't even have to pay for it because it's under $1,000, so it's a misdemeanor. I forget where that law is. Maybe San Francisco. But a lot of them, they probably just help themselves to the tents and walk out. Judging by the tents all over the city, there has to be a shortage of tents at Walmart and those kinds of places. Tent city. Homeless encampments everywhere that you look. Well, I don't want to over-exaggerate it. I'm sure there's pockets of Portland that still are beautiful. I'm sure, but judging by some of our supporters who are out there, there's plenty of places in Portland that they would have gone into no problem 3, 4, 5 years ago, but now it's different. They stay away from it. It's too dangerous. There's too many lunatics, literally too many lunatics on the loose. God has a history there. Herbert Armstrong had a history there. And if you think about the way that God prepared Mr. Armstrong, he writes about this in his autobiography. He says, I got this spark of ambition. This was before he moved out to Oregon. He was working at a hotel in Iowa, and there was a supervisor, I think in his mid-40s, who said about Mr. Armstrong, a young Mr. Armstrong, a 16-year-old, a teenager, he said, I think you've got it in you to make something of your life. If you're willing to work for it, if you're willing to put forth the effort. And he did. He did. He wasn't converted to God's truth until his mid-30s. But that's the beginning of his work career, you could say. That experience at 16, he talked about having the ambitious desire to make something of his life, to do something, to be a doer, to become a hard worker. In the autobiography, it says, it's impossible to estimate the importance of this sudden arousal of ambition, this injection of an intense desire for success, this igniting of the spark of determined energy to achieve worthy accomplishment. He says, this was the turning point of my life. As I've brought out before, he didn't say this was the turning point of his teen years. He says it was the turning point of his entire life. And this was years before he was even converted to the truth. I mean, you have to have, even spiritually, you have to have some ambitious desire to really draw near to God. And that's what's so sad when you look at a city like Portland and so many people just wandering around aimlessly. They come out of their tent if they're living on a slope next to a highway and they just dump their trash down the slope. Presumably right near a sign that says, hey, littering could be $6,000 fine. But there's no government there to actually enforce the laws. Or if they do, they enforce it on people that maybe throw a piece of litter out of their car door. Even as homeless people live all over the place and are just littering. They're relieving themselves on the streets in some cases. Wandering around aimlessly, and who knows how many of them are being harassed or even possessed by demons that just goes right against every biblical principle. I mean, there's hundreds and hundreds of Bible verses that talk about being employed or working for supervisors or your master and really striving to please the boss and to be a productive employee. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. Well, in the physical sense, there's obviously a spiritual dimension. It's missing from all of our nations. But even in the physical sense, I mean, this is the United States of America, after all. There used to be some get up and go. There used to be some American ingenuity that we prided ourselves in. But now, and you know, COVID, these past couple of years, it's just destroyed the will to work for so many of our people, for so many of our young people. You can't drive through a city without seeing all these help wanted signs. How is it that in a city where there's help wanted signs everywhere, that there's also people living on the streets doing nothing, helping no one? There's work available, as I was telling our students this morning. And you're going to, I mean, you're going to progress right up the ladder if you just show a willingness to work and to work hard, to lead a productive life. The autobiography says, "This was the turning point in my life. Suddenly, life became a whole new ballgame. There had awakened within a totally new outlook on the future." Mr. Armstrong says, "This, I believe, is the vital ingredient that has been missing in most human lives. Most continue through life, as I was, prior to this arousal of ambition, the idea of looking forward to achieving success or an accomplishment of any note never intruded itself into my mind. Nor does it," he says, "probably in the average mind." It says, "and it was like an intrusion, for my mind was uninterruptedly occupied only with the interests, pleasures, and enjoyments of the moment." That's Mr. Armstrong's assessment of his teen years before this spark of ambition was lit. He said, "I was just preoccupied with the interests, pleasures, and enjoyments of the moment. That's all." And that's the way it is with a lot of people today. Doesn't have to be. We're free moral agents. We can choose. We can choose a more difficult, hard path where, yes, you've got to really show some effort. The hotel boss where he was working said, "You can be a success, but you've got to be willing to put forth effort." And Mr. Armstrong did. And he had some changes come along in his mid-30s, as I say, but he never stopped driving himself. Before conversion, it was driving himself by vanity to be a success and to rub shoulders with the high and mighty, to make a lot of money. And then when God struck him down, when God humbled him, then he took that spark of ambition, he took that ambitious desire, and he drove himself in service to God. He put everything he had into his service to and worship of his Maker, God Almighty. Like I was saying to the students this morning, I mean, this is something that, it's not just something you take and apply when you're on the job, you know, when you're getting paid that hourly wage. There's a principle here that really does apply to everything in life. We have to work hard to build a good marriage. We have to work hard to raise obedient children. We have to work hard to establish a close and intimate relationship with God, our Heavenly Father. We've got to work hard on the job. We've got to work hard in the classroom. God created us to achieve, to grow, to overcome, to produce, to work. John 9 and verse 4, it says, "I must work the works of him that sent me while it is day." It says, "The night comes when no man can work." Jesus said, "I've got to work while there's still time. I mean, this was a young man. He died in the prime of his life. He died in his early 30s. And he hurried. He worked hard. You can see this in the Gospels. Just surrounded by these crowds, as the one I mentioned in a sermon recently. You know, these parents that came and said, our 12-year-old daughter, she's sick and about to die. And he was on his way through this large group of people just pressing up against him. One woman from behind grabbed the hem of his garment and was healed. And he sensed the virtue that had left his body, his mind. And he stopped and he said, who touched me? And his disciples said, what do you mean, who touched you? Everybody's touching you. You're surrounded by people. He said, I sense there's some virtue that's drained out of me. Well, then he went from that crowd and that experience and that interaction with that woman over to the house where they were wailing and moaning hysterically because the 12-year-old girl had died, and Jesus told them to calm down. And he raised that girl to life. What a ministry. What a service he was to humanity. And how did the world respond? How did the world react? Well, they crucified him. They beat him to a bloody pulp. They scourged him before the crucifixion and then crucified the Son of God. God says, now, you better be able to pick up your cross, your stake, and follow in the steps of Jesus. He says in 1 Peter 2, there's the example. There's the example. God in the flesh set it for us. He came, he said, I must work the works of him that sent me. I've got a lot I need to accomplish before I'm crucified, before I'm sacrificed, before I'm slain, the lamb slain from the foundation of the world. John 5:17 says, my Father works hitherto, and I work. That's just what we do. We both work. We both produce. God created us to do the same. When we talk about God reproducing himself, this is what it is. He's producing or reproducing his character, his nature. And it says about God, my Father works hitherto, and I work. Exodus 20 and verse 8, it says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. So there's that, the fourth commandment. It says in verse 9, 6 days shall you labor and do all your work. So this is what mayors and governors, this is the message that ought to be proclaimed to all of our citizens. As it is, you've got these sprawling government agencies spending billions and billions. Rachel Maddow says, hey, get the money for Twitter. I mean, it should have gone to these EV gas stations so that we can charge up the electric cars. Well, she is right about the fact that money is grossly mismanaged. And Twitter, no doubt, huge. I mean, it's not worth $40, $50 billion. But then, like Mr. Armstrong used to say, there's all this wealth, there's all this prosperity, there's the billionaires, there's the gadgets, there's the social media sites, and then there's the scourge of homelessness, of lawlessness, of unhappiness. People everywhere, discontented, miserable, suffering, can't make a marriage work. It's the great paradox of our time. All of this wealth, this prosperity that we've squandered away, all of this evil, all of this filth, in the case of some of our cities, I mean, literal filth, just sliding down the embankment. Verse 11, it says, for in 6 days the Eternal made heaven and earth, the sea and all that in them is, and he rested the seventh day. It says, wherefore the Eternal blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. So we're just following in the example of our Maker, the great Creator God. 6 days shall you labor and do all of your work. So I was telling the freshmen this morning, it takes work to fulfill your role as a mother, as a father, as a husband, a wife. It takes work to be a good parent. It takes work to be a good student. It takes work to really perform well on the job. And if we're willing to learn and then to push ourselves with some ambitious desire to excel, we will do well. And the thing about it is, I mean, what an exciting and rewarding life it is if you're out there, like God, really working with an attitude of, I must work while there's time. The old correspondence lesson, it says, the spirit or intent of this law shows that a man is normally expected to keep busily engaged in gainful work during the first 6 days of the week. God produced his wealth, his creation, through labor during the first 6 days of the week. We are to do likewise. I mean, you add the spiritual dimension to all of this that we in the church should obviously wrap our minds around. I mean, we're even with the physical, though. Our hearts are in God's work. So we want to support the work. So for the 6 days that we go out and actually work, we want to produce. We want to better ourselves. We want to increase our income if it's possible. The more that we do, the bigger that tithe payment will be, or that offering will be on a holy day. The more we can support God's work, the more we can give, contribute to the work. Now, there's obviously more ways than just contributing finances or money. We pray earnestly for God's work. We contribute spiritually. We serve. We give. Genesis 2 and verse 8, it says, and the Eternal God planted a garden eastward in Eden, and there he put the man whom he had formed. And then verse 15 says, and he took the man, he put him into the garden to dress it and to keep it. In other words, to really produce, to beautify. God had to teach him about how to make food, how it would grow. And of course, you can see this in Exodus 16 with respect to the Israelites of old. I mean, he rained manna from heaven. They called it manna because they didn't know what it was. What is it? Well, they had to smash it up and then cook it and bake it and turn it into bread that they could eat. And that took time. It was time consuming. God could have rained down the food in its entirety, already completed, cooked and everything. But he didn't do that. They had to work for it. You see this as a principle, as I say, all throughout God's purpose and plan. He's reproducing himself. He's reproducing his character, his nature. Listen to this quote from 1979. This is Mr. Armstrong. He says, the idea of happiness that has been generated in the world is laziness. Sitting around in idleness and ease and playing on a harp, perhaps, and having nothing to do but be waited on. We're degenerating so fast, he said. This is in 1979. We're degenerating so fast that you just can't see it. And nobody will believe it because we like to kid ourselves and be deceived into thinking we're getting better and better. You only get better and better when you work at it. And we don't like to work. We're allergic to it, it seems. That's what he wrote back in 1979. Wow. We don't like to work. What would he say about us today? What would he say about our nations, our cities? This allergy that we have for working. There's so many benefits that come from hard work. Even the Apostle Paul warned not to be a busybody, but to get out, to roll up your sleeves and to go to work producing. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to email the show, you can write us, td@thetrumpet.com. www.thetrumpitdaily.com. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.